This is Jim Inkster, and thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Signature support is from First Financial Tax and Accounting Services. Your number is 877-217-5757. And our email is talk@talklouisiana.org. We'll cover some ground today, including football, but right now the world is focused on Louisiana for a different reason, and that's because of Hurricane Ida, which made landfall last Sunday. So we're now 9 days into this, and reports are that more than 456,000 people are still in the dark in our state. One of the areas most impacted continues to be Jefferson Parish, where nearly 148,000 people are without power. And we thank the people who are listeners to WWNO for joining us today. We are simulcasting both on WRKF and WWNO in New Orleans. So if you're out there and about, we'd like to hear from you and hear your story. And this has had a major economic impact, as you can imagine, that still will have to be assessed. And perhaps the best person to do that is Dr. Lauren Scott, who's been doing his thing for a very long time, the former head of the LSU Economics Department, now professor emeritus at LSU, and he is a member of the 32-member National Business Economic Issues Council. Every year he provides an economic forecast in our state, and he was in, I think, the final stages of putting that together, and then boom, Ida hits. And good morning to you, Dr. Scott.
Good morning, Jim. Thank you for that nice introduction. Yeah, this is not the ideal time to have a job as a forecaster in this state, for sure.
What's the early read?
Well, on the hurricane, as you said, we're only 9 days from it. It's like trying to forecast where a rocket's going to go when it's about 2 feet off the ground. You mentioned how many people are without power. Given the horrendous destruction by this storm, I'm impressed with how much is back on power. I mean, I think the power companies have done an amazing job in getting it back much faster than we thought. My understanding is I think Energy is hoping to get everybody back by the night, I believe. And that would certainly be a great thing. In thinking about, you know, again, when the rocket's only 4 feet off the ground, how do you try to predict the impact of this thing? And basically, the model that I'm using is to look at what happened in Lake Charles after Rita. When Rita hit, of course, it was a level three. It was not as bad. It was a little bit less than this, but it was still a very bad storm to hit Lake Charles, and it destroyed a lot of homes, thousands and thousands of homes, and put a lot of businesses out of work. However, if you look at the employment data for Lake Charles during that time period, they only lost jobs for 1 month. And then they started to grow again. As a matter of fact, they have an economy much like what's over here in many ways. They have a lot of refineries. They have a lot of chemical plants, just like we do up and down the river. And they were just hammered. As a matter of fact, I'm sure their assets were not as hardened as they are today in our area. But I think that hit in the latter part of September. By December, all those refineries are back up. All the chemical plants were back up and running. It would happen fairly quickly. Now, one important factor behind that was that federal aid came very quickly, all right, to their aid. Matter of fact, you recall it under Katrina, federal aid came to New Orleans and Lake Charles very quickly in those years. That's really an important assumption. If we can get federal aid down here very quickly, then I think what we can do is we can pop. There's a very good chance for us to pop back very quickly.
Well, it's a case in which Lake Charles is still coming back, and we may very well hear from the mayor in just a bit, I'm told, and he has a story that resonates for those who have been through this, and he went through two or three of these events last year. And this, Dr. Scott, a listener notes, is not only a Louisiana phenomenon, but it looks like it's something that's going to affect the country in a way that could affect the national economy based on what happened in urban centers like Atlanta, which has more people in its metro area than we do in our whole state, and New York City. What are your thoughts about the impact of Ida across the great land of ours?
Well, it was certainly actually its impact on the other cities and the other areas of the country were a lot bigger than I had anticipated. I mean, typically when these storms hit, most of it occurs on this kind of coastal areas or the near coastal areas, and then it dies down to a tropical storm, and not much happens as it goes forward except for some rain. But it, unfortunately, in this case, it was a lot of rain. So, but again, a lot depends upon how quickly federal aid is pumped in there. And that'll have a lot to do with how quickly the national economy will come back as well. Now, I keep repeating that phrase, how quickly, because if you look at the model of Lake Charles and Laura and Delta hurricanes, you get exactly the opposite. Actually, Lake Charles is actually worse off employment-wise today than it was in April of 20 when the complete shutdown from COVID occurred. It's probably the only metropolitan area of its size in the United States that's actually worse off today than it was in April of 2020. And I think the primary reason for that is that normally federal aid comes to an area within 120 days. It's been a year since Laura and Delta hit, and no, the federal aid has still not come to Lake Charles. So my assumption that we can recover from this relatively quickly depends heavily on that very heroic assumption that federal aid will come fast. That's a real key to how quickly we can pop back.
877-217-5757 for Dr. Lauren Scott. Jim and Walker. Hi, Jim. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Good morning. It's nice to finally have sort of working cell phone. And wait a minute. Water. We got sewer back yesterday. A couple of quick points. The first one is that our problems in Lake Charles, a lot of that stem from the fact that we had a federal government run by a president who he had political reasons that we had a Democratic governor, and so he punished states who did not fall in line with him. And then the second point is that I'm not sure exactly what the incentive is for any of the power utility companies in this state to harden anything, because what happens is that the state allows them to pass along the costs of repair to their customers instead of forcing them to pay for the costs of repair. If they have to pay for the costs of repair, it would be amazing how suddenly they decided, well, we really need to harden things so we don't get hit with bills like this.
All right. Dr. Scott, Jim gave you a lot to work with there. Your thoughts?
Well, he sure did. Of course, one might argue that Biden has been in office since January. And still, there's no federal aid coming to Lake Charles, despite the fact that, again, that we have a Democratic governor. So there's a lot of politics involved, I'm sure, here in that decision. But it's still, if you're a Lake Charles person, it is unforgivable that it has taken so long for whoever was president. It's just unforgivable that they have not received aid soon. With regard to the hardening of the assets, first of all, the Entergy has spent a good bit of money hardening their assets along the coast, as it turns out. And but still, 150 mile an hour, in some cases, 170 mile an hour gust are just too much for some of these very tall transmission towers. Putting things underground, for example, which would be a great way to harden your assets, is extraordinarily expensive. And again, the utility companies, absolutely, you can't have a utility company that's losing money. You can't you can't do that. If they're losing money, they're going to go out of business. We're not going to have any electricity at all. So the only way that they can function and continue to provide us electricity is for them to be able to pass any kind of cost like that along to the ratepayers. And they are restricted by the Public Service Commission on how much profit they can make. So they are not they're not allowed to just make unlimited amounts of profit and, you know, just do extremely well because the PSC oversees them. And when Clico or Entergy has a monopoly on producing electricity in an area, they get that monopoly, but they get it at a cost, and that cost is that the PSC regulates.
All right, Dr. Scott, we're going to have to take a break, but if you'll hang with us, we'll return in 90 seconds. We'll hear more from Dr. Lauren Scott about the fallout economically from Hurricane Ida. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. 877-217-5757 is your number. Dr. Lauren Scott with us for a few more minutes. And we do note that Hurricane Ida survivors who were displaced from their homes are qualified for $500 checks for food, water, and other urgent needs through the Federal Emergency Management Agency. That aid applies to those displaced from their primary dwelling and have life-sustaining needs like water, food, first aid, prescriptions, going down the list. It's a benefit that I am sure and would hope that anybody who's affected will take advantage of it. FEMA officials say 95,000 people were approved to stay in hotels for up to 30 days, with the federal government paying for the room. 877-217-5757 for Dr. Scott. Talk at talklouisiana.org is our email. In a few minutes, we'll hear from the mayor of Lake Charles, Nick Hunter. And Dr. Scott, this is a case in which the government is necessary to get some people back on their feet. And just about everybody was affected. How were you affected by Hurricane Ida? Dr. Scott?
Yeah.
Yeah, how were you? How were you?
Did you have a question? Go ahead.
Yeah, how were you affected?
I was personally. Thank you, God, for a roof over my house and power. Our neighborhood, took a lot of tree damage and that sort of thing. But fortunately, my house is fine, and we have a generator, so we were okay. So I was very, very fortunate. I was looking in the paper today. It's a picture of gentleman down in the Houma area whose house was behind him, just, shattered. So, compared to most, very, very blessed, as it turns out.
Hurricane Ida survivors, by the way, can apply by calling 800-621-3362. That's 800-621-3362. And FEMA, according to reports, has already paid $66 million to survivors of Ida who sought the checks. Total of 133,000 households have qualified already. So a lot of people, much of the state affected. How does this one compare with others? You rolled off some of the honor roll of previous storms, and I guess Katrina, because of the flooding in New Orleans, was the worst. But we've had other devastating storms, not only to the environment, but also to the economy.
Yeah, a lot of them have been really, really tough. Well, Laura and Delta last year were just terrible for the southwestern part of the state, really going all the way up almost to Shreveport. If you were in the timber industry, a lot of the timber along that there were just snapped in half. And timber on the ground is very difficult to harvest. Most of the harvesting ability for timber comes from it being upright, not laying on the ground. So a lot of people lost a lot of money there. And of course, the big issue initially when you have a storm like this, and this is true for all the plants along the river here, is getting back up again. It takes a long time for these plants, after once they shut down, to get started again. And a lot of people don't realize that that's a major undertaking. So that's one issue. The second issue is getting power. And most of them are that's still something of an issue, but it'll get resolved quickly. But the third one is getting the workers there. It is certainly in the last week of trouble getting work simply because they couldn't get gasoline. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, they're very absorbed in getting their houses back in order. So But once you get power to an area, things really start to change. And to be honest with you, Jim, I mean, one of the things that encourages me the most right now is how quickly things are coming back at Fort Fouchon, which was the hardest hit and very, very vital asset for anything going on offshore. It's tough to get anything, any of the platforms and drilling activity going on back again offshore if you can't get people out there and if you can't get supplies out to them. So it's been very encouraging to see how quickly that's port is starting to come back.
877-217-5757. We are wrapping it up with Dr. Scott. Nick Hunter, Mayor of Lake Charles, is on deck. And a listener, Joe in Norco, says, what about the nursing home industry, which has taken a beating in the last few days? And there are some nursing homes, many, that are well-run, but as we found out, there are others that were not well-run, and there may actually be criminal charges filed as a result of deaths because of people who were not taken care of properly. Your thoughts, Dr. Scott?
I don't have much on that. I think it is an industry that varies around by quality and dramatically by quality. They had a really tough problem. I just think about the issue that they had of trying to moving people that are nursing home folks out of harm's way. I think that was an extremely difficult problem. And honestly, I don't know enough about that industry to be able to comment very much.
Well, we always enjoy getting your view of the world, and glad you're safe and sound, and best to you and your wife, Peggy. And let's keep talking. Dr. Scott, good to visit with you.
Thank you, Jim. Thanks for having me on.
My pleasure. 877-217-5757. And now we're joined by the mayor of Lake Charles, the Honorable Nick Hunter. Good morning, Mr. Mayor.
Good morning, sir. How are you?
Doing well. And we're getting a view of what you experienced a few times last year. And Dr. Scott was talking about help being on the way. And in Lake Charles, there is still help that has not come. How is it looking right now for you?
Well, certainly it's better than it was a year ago. And anytime I answer that question in light of what's happened over the last week, I am careful to say that we certainly still have needs here in Lake Charles. We are a battered community. We are far from recovered. However, we also understand what Southeast Louisiana is going through. And in the immediate aftermath and the hours and immediate days after a disaster like Ida, certainly the focus, the primary focus should be on those individuals without shelter, without food, water, clothing, medical care. We were there a year ago. We know how that is, and it's not a comfortable position to be in. But after that conversation, the next also important conversation is long-term recovery, and we were very thankful and I will say optimistic. I was using the term cautiously optimistic a few weeks ago, but I will actually change that to optimistic after we heard some of President Biden's comments on last week where he specifically mentioned Lake Charles and Southwest Louisiana. That was very appreciated.
So aid could be rolled into one for you and for all those affected dramatically by Hurricane Ida?
It could. And I'll tell you that my philosophy right now on this is I'm trying to focus not so much on how long it took us to get here or the fact that it probably took Ida for the conversation to be elevated. I'm focusing on the fact that we are in the mix and that help is certainly closer today than it was a few weeks ago. Maybe down the road, a few years down the road, I may make some blunt commentary a little bit more on this whole situation and you know what a lot of Lake Charles people are feeling right now. But I will simply say that we are going to take help however we can get it. And if that includes being a part of a larger disaster package that might include parts of Ida and other states, we welcome that opportunity. And it is very much needed. Here in Southwest Louisiana, when you walk around certain neighborhoods, it looks like an Ida or a Laura hit yesterday, because we simply have not received the supplemental disaster aid that other communities have received literally days after an event. It took Katrina, 10 days after to receive what we're asking for, 34 days after Andrew, 98 days after Superstorm Sandy, and we sit here 375 days post Laura. And having gone through four federally declared natural disasters, more than any other city in American history, and we're asking for the same equitable treatment.
Well, you have been through it and have lived to see the other side, and as you just stated, parts of the city are still hammered dramatically, but yet the governor, I think, was accurate, Mayor, when he said our people are tough and resilient, and we're being put to the test.
We are. We are tough and resilient, and it is not in my nature to be a pessimist. It is in my nature to be an optimist, but I am also a realist. And I know what New Orleans was hit with 16 years ago, and I know the amount of federal money that was pumped into that city and what it took for them to recover. And even today, you can still drive around New Orleans and see some remnants of Katrina.
We will have to pause. We're back after this. This is Jim Engster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. Please, you're listening not only on WRKF, spanning much of South Louisiana, but also today on WWNO in New Orleans at 89.9 on the dial, 877-217-5757, no matter where you are on the planet. That's our number for Talk Louisiana. Send emails to talk at talklouisiana.org. A few more minutes with the mayor of Lake Charles, the Honorable Nick Hunter, who's been through it. Three remarkable and devastating weather events last year for Mayor Hunter, and he has lived to talk about it. As things go, there weren't as many fatalities as there could have been, just as in this most recent event, Hurricane Ida. We've been spared a large number of fatalities, although at last report, 13, I think, was the number. But Mayor Hunter is hoping that help is on the way. And independent of that, just from a morale perspective, what do you have to say, Mayor, to the people in Baton Rouge and New Orleans? And I think we have lost the mayor at least temporarily. So while we're waiting for him, Alondra, let's go to David in St. Francisville. David, you're on Talk Louisiana. Good morning to you, David. David, good morning. Yes, sir.
You know, your previous caller was Dr. Lauren Scott. And I've gone to a number of his presentations where he's talked about all the new industry that's come into Louisiana. Well, about, if I recollect, about 25% of it that came in, like $20 to $30 billion of it, came into the Lake Charles area. So you have all these huge industries that are there that are certainly generating jobs, but they're not generating any property taxes, which would go to Lake Charles, would go to Calcasieu Parish, and would provide hundreds of millions of dollars that the community would have to be able to reinvest to recover from storms.
All right, Mayor Hunter is back with us. David in St. Francisville was talking about the fact that these refineries don't pay a lot in taxes, not property taxes, to the city of Lake Charles, he says. Now, that, of course, would be nice if they did. They do provide a lot of other assets to the economy, but in an ideal world, would they be providing more?
Well, a couple comments. First of all, even if they were paying property taxes, they wouldn't be paying it to the city of Lake Charles. The vast majority of these projects are located outside the city limits. That being said, our state has made some changes in the tax exemption program, ITEP, and I think that some of those changes are warranted. Certainly, 100% tax exemption for 20 years is probably not an equitable thing for this community, and the governor has made some changes to put more qualifications into that and to make sure that's not 100%. I will say that if you completely take ITEP off the table, if you remove that incentive and you don't replace it with anything else, some of these investments will not come here. And I know that some people want to debate that fact, but I truly believe that is the case. ITEP has some good things about it, and it has some bad things about it. But to simply throw out the baby with the bathwater and to say that we're going to do away with it altogether and not replace it with anything, I think we would have a rude awakening as to where some of these companies may choose to locate.
Before we lost you for a moment, I'd asked about the morale and how you've come back from a psychological perspective. These hurricanes have an immense toll not only on the environment, on the infrastructure, but on people. How has that process been?
Well, it's still a process. And I think when you ask someone in this community, how is Lake Charles? How are you doing? You're going to get 80,000 different answers because that's how many people we have living here. It is a very natural, understandable, and justifiable emotion for people to feel despondent right now, especially when they look at what has happened in Southeast Louisiana, when they compare the type of response that other disasters have received over the last 30 years, and then look at Lake Charles here. I mean, look, again, I want to stay focused on the fact that help is closer today than it was a few months ago. But I saw an interesting meme. Some of you may have seen this, where it's like people are in a swimming pool, and there's one kid that's getting taken care of by the parent, and then there's another kid that's drowning next to the parent, and then there's a kid at the bottom of the pool, and you know, the kid at the bottom of the pool had the caption Lake Charles under it, and that's kind of the way some people feel right now. And again, we want to focus on moving forward. We want to focus on the fact that we're closer to aid because of President Biden's comments, but it's been a long time, and we're strong, but we also there's limitations. There's limitations to what human capital and financial capital is here in Southwest Louisiana, and quite frankly, we reached those financial limitations a long time ago.
877-217-5757. Mary Stein from the East Baton Rouge Parish Library System will talk with us about what's happening in her world, and the libraries, by the way, are open, and that is wonderful, but Barry in Mid-City of Baton Rouge, who also spends some quality time in Lake Charles. Barry, you're on with Mayor Hunter. Good morning, Barry.
Good morning, Jim. And Mayor Hunter, I must commend you for the tremendous work you are doing for all of Lake Charles and Calcasieu. We are still in the process of repairing our beautiful Temple Sinai, where you have been our guest more than twice in the last couple years. And God willing, we'll be back when we have a major healing service. But we're for the whole community. But we're still working on restoring our temple. And I'd like to just say on the morale aspect, wow, Lake Charles, Calcasieu, Cameron, these people, and I'd like to count my family as part of them, we are a resilient people. And I cannot thank Mayor Nick for all the hard work he's doing for our community.
Well, thank you, Barry in Mid-City, and happy Jewish New Year, 5782, right?
Yeah, 5782, Lashana Tova to everybody.
All right, Cameron in North
thank
Baton
you,
Rouge.
Rabbi.
Cameron, good morning. You're on with Mayor Nick Hunter. Hi, Cameron.
Kevin. It's Kevin.
Okay, I'm sorry, Kevin. Kevin, thank you.
Yes. I wanted to know, wasn't he against voting for infrastructure, him and Congressman Grave, and against all of those things, and against the president, and now they're acting like that they are so with it. And these other companies don't have nowhere else to go, so they're going to have to pay you anyway.
All right. Well, the mayor doesn't have a vote in Congress. Congressman Graves did vote against the infrastructure bill, as did all the other Republicans in the delegation, with the exception of Senator Cassidy. But since he asked the question, do you think the federal infrastructure legislation will be beneficial to our state and to your community, Mayor?
I do. And actually, I wrote an op-ed in support of it. I welcomed President Biden when he came to Lake Charles. I truly view my job right now as mayor of Lake Charles in this recovery period of our history as a very non-political, apolitical job. I mean, I'm going to break bread with anyone that can help, and I'm going to call it the way I see it. And I truly believe that infrastructure is needed. And I don't care whether it's a Republican or a Democrat president or Republican or Democrat governor, we've needed a new I-10 bridge for 30 years. So if there's an infrastructure package that could help move that along, I am supportive.
Mayor, thank you for joining us, and let's keep talking, and best of luck.
All right, sir. I appreciate you. Bye-bye.
Always a pleasure. Thank you. We're joined now by Mary Stein from the East Baton Rouge Parish Library System, longtime employee there and in high ranks, the assistant director. And the library's got back on track pretty quickly in the midst of all this. And this time, certainly an oasis from the madness that is Hurricane Ida. How's it looking for the libraries across this area, Mary Stein?
Well, Jim, we are open here in East Baton Rouge Parish. And in fact, we were open as soon as we got enough power to open, and we opened throughout the parish. All 14 locations are open. We had even deployed the bookmobile to stations that needed a mobile hotspot and computing so that you could start registering for FEMA. That's something the minute our doors open, people streamed in to not only cool off, but to charge up, power up, connect, tell their loved ones that they where they were and how they were, and then start that process of registering with FEMA and working through the various government forms that all require power and internet. So we have it, and you are welcome in.
All right. Well, that's a nice reason to go to the library, is to go there and apply for benefits if you're eligible and if you think you might be, if you're affected. I'm sure some folks like to come in just for the air conditioning, though, Mary.
Absolutely. And we are nicely cool. You might even want to bring a sweater so that you can layer up. And one thing it was fun to see is books never need power. So people remember, yes, the digital library was there, and quite a few people downloaded before they lost power, and they were able to read as long as they had power on their devices. But the books always worked. So I love it when people rediscover the fact that print works even in a hurricane, and a nice run on bestsellers here at the main library. We still have more. Don't worry.
All right. Now, I know there was an event scheduled, I think, for tomorrow with Todd Graves, the founder of the extremely popular worldwide phenomenon Raising Cane's. Is that still on?
Yes, sir, because that's virtual. So what the thing about this business forum we're doing in partnership with the Greater Baton Rouge Business Report, every month there's a fabulous international or national speaker. Often they are authors of books, and these are premier
All right.
speakers that we'll never be able to get. So he's going to be on, but you have to register ahead of time to be able to either hear it live as it drops virtually at 11 in the morning tomorrow, or to hear the archive for about 30 days.
We'll be back after this quick timeout. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. 877-217-5757 is your number. And we're wrapping it up with Mary Stein, Assistant Director of the East Baton Rouge Parish Library System, with 14 libraries around the city. And this is an entity that got back up quickly, and you can go in there and fill out your forms for FEMA assistance. You can also get some air conditioning if you're without power. And in a moment, we'll hear from Ruchi Gupta, the author of Food Without Fear. But Mary Stein, I did want to note, as far as the virtual meeting, if you will, with Todd Graves of Raising Cane's, that's tomorrow. For those who would like to participate, how do they do so?
You simply go to the website businessforumusa.com/Baton Rouge, and then you'll be registered. They'll send you the link, and even if you don't find it convenient to listen when it drops live at 11 tomorrow, you'll be able to hear the archive for 30 days. And I have found it so rewarding to be listening to Steve Forbes and John Maxwell and even Nick Saban, Josh Linkner, and all the other fabulous speakers that have been in the 2021 lineup. I'm really thrilled that we could be a part of this and bring these speakers to Baton Rouge listeners.
Well, thank you, Mary Stein. Always good to catch up with you, and glad you're back on track. Sanctuary from the Madness, the East Baton Rouge Parish Library System. Mary, I suspect right now you're at the Goodwood location.
I am. And in fact, we're planning for the future. I'm about ready to go into a design meeting for the new South Branch.
Well, we'll want to hear about that.
Yes, you will. Okay.
Thank you, Mary. Jim. Take care. 877-217-5757. And in a moment, we're going to Ruchi Gupta, a fascinating book about food. And at this time, of course, many in our area, we were scrambling for anything we could get. But most of the time, we should watch what we eat. And we don't do a very good job of that in Louisiana. But before we get to Dr. Gupta, it must be noted that over the weekend, there was a football game for the LSU Fighting Tigers that did not turn out well. UCLA blasted LSU, dominated the game 38-27 in the Rose Bowl, LSU's first trip to the Rose Bowl, only second game ever for the Tigers in California. And Coach O and his team are now on the ropes. They do have an easy schedule the next few weeks. McNeese and another non-entity, if you will, a non-conference game that is going to be probably a patsy. So right now, though, when you look at the conference schedule, the question is whether LSU can be much better than it was last year, if at all. And the Tigers were 5-5 coming off a season in which they went 15-0 and won the national title. And Coach O, who tried to get the USC job, he was the interim coach in 2013, and he would have gotten the job permanently probably, but he went 6-2, and he lost 35-14 to UCLA. So he has a mad on for UCLA, and that was before the game. That was before UCLA beat the tar out of his Tigers. Here's how Coach O sounded going into the Rose Bowl as a UCLA fan greeted him. Here's Coach Edward James Orgeron in all his glory with that patented sound. Alondra, let's hear from Coach O, who's walking into the Rose Bowl as we speak, if we can get him online. I think many of you have heard it, but he is a man who is a fellow who doesn't mince words. And when LSU is winning, everybody loves him. And when LSU is losing right now, everybody says, hey, that's not the way to conduct matters when you're in
the truth is that Hollywood.
That's not him. So I tell you what, let's skip Coach O. We'll live to fight another day. That's the one that's going to live forever. Okay. Mike Patton says we got it. Our engineer is in there now. Let's see if we can get Coach O. No? Let's go to
LSU.
There it is. I heard it for a moment, but let's give that one a pass. But I do want to note that today is the 70th birthday of one of the great LSU players of all time, Bertram Hayes Jones, quarterback 1972, All-American, 70 years old for the man who was NFL Most Valuable Player in 1976 when he was all of 25. In the year of 1972, November 4th, LSU was 6-0 in the top five in the country, and the Tigers were trying to stay unbeaten going into Alabama, fell behind the whole game to Ole Miss. They were down 16-10. And Burt Jones led LSU down the field. The Tigers scored to tie the game with no time left on the clock with a 10-yard pass to Brad Davis. And here's how John Ferguson described the close of that game against the Johnny Rebs, November 4, 1972.
1 second to play, and so time will run out on the next one. Al Coffey is coming into the game in place of Ledoux. Here is the game over. Jones back to throw, looking for a receiver. He has Davis. It is good. On the last play of the game, Brad Davis gets a Burt Jones pass to the corner of the end zone.
John Ferguson, November 4th, 1972. And now we're joined by Ruchi Gupta. She is a professor of pediatrics and medicine at Northwestern University's Feinberg School of Medicine and clinical attending at Lurie Children's Hospital of Chicago, and her book is Food Without Fear, Identify, Prevent, and Treat Food Allergies, Intolerances, and Sensitivities. And I mentioned in Louisiana we have an obese population, one of the most obese in the country, and many of us do not eat as well as we should. And you're saying that we can do this and treat ourselves well if we take some simple steps. What's the condensed version of this, Dr. Gupta?
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. This book really focuses on something else that's pretty unique. I appreciate what you said. It's so important to eat healthy and, exercise and all the healthy habits. And we do talk about it a little bit
in this book. But the other big thing that's happening is about 1 in 5 adults have some kind of a food condition. So it could be like a food allergy, an intolerance, gluten, you know, lactose. There's a lot of things out there that are making people uncomfortable, you know, and it could be something like an intolerance where, you know, you eat something and then you have a negative reaction in your body and it's like GI related and you get cramps and potentially diarrhea and, you know, bloating and migraines. Or it could be something really severe that could be life-threatening, like a food allergy where, you know, you could get trouble breathing and throat closing and, you know, deteriorate pretty quick. So what we wanted to talk about in this book, because 1 in 5 adults have it, 1 in 13 kids, but very few go to a doctor and get diagnosed. You usually eat something and then you just take it out of your diet. You know, you're like, oh, something bad happened. I'm not eating that food again. And so trying to understand what's going on in your body and what you have and what you can do about it, how you can manage it and treat it, is what this book is all about.
And Dr. Gupta, can you tell us the difference between an allergy and what might be an intolerance or sensitivity to food?
Yeah, absolutely. That's the core of the book. So thank you. Food allergy is actually immune mediated. So your immune system is attacking a food like it's an invader. So that is what's happening. So the cascade happens pretty quick. So the minute you eat the food, the immune system gets notified and goes on attack. Those foods, you know, you commonly hear about are, you know, the peanuts, the tree nuts, milk, egg, shellfish is a big one in adults, thin fish, soy, wheat, and sesame. Those are the top 9, we call them. But you can be allergic to anything. So that's a food allergy. Now, an intolerance, a lot of time you see this with lactose. So that can be confusing. Is it a milk allergy or is it a lactose intolerance? You see it with gluten. But what an intolerance is you don't have the enzymes in your body to break down that food. So for lactose intolerance, you don't have the right enzyme. So you get that bloating and discomfort. And it's very, you know, very disturbing. So for that, there are other treatments and management. You know, so it's not immune related. It's more your body lacks this enzyme. So that's the basic difference. But knowing it, for example, for lactose intolerance, there are things you can do. There are medications you can take that will give you that enzyme so that you can enjoy milk products, et cetera. So, yeah. So we have this whole spectrum. We have a quiz in the book where you can answer a series of questions and have a better understanding of what might be happening. And then, you know, kind of look up some of the possibilities. Mm-hmm. And then when you go to see your doctor, have a really good conversation on how to manage it and maybe even treat it and get rid of it.
And you say there are some allergies that are on the rise that might surprise us. How so?
Yeah. Oh, there's quite a few. I mean, things like for adults, shellfish is a really big one. And I know that's probably pretty popular down there.
Yeah.
I'm curious to how many people have negative reactions when they eat it. And the interesting thing is adults are developing new allergies as adults. So they used to be able to eat it just fine. Now when they eat it, you know, they break out in hives or get, you know, some kind of a negative reaction. And that's really hard. I've had so many adults say, I love shrimp. I'm not living my life without it. What do I do about this? You know? So, there's a lot in the book that covers all of this and then what you can actually do. But yeah, they're, like I said, 1 in 5 adults. I mean, 85 million people in the U.S. are avoiding some food. And so this book is just trying to help people get food freedom and be able to enjoy foods. And like you said, I know you guys have some of the best foods possible. Mm-hmm. there. So it may not be an issue as much for you, but if you have a food condition and you can't enjoy it, then that's a problem.
Well, thank you, Dr. Ruchi Gupta. Her book is Food Without Fear, Identify, Prevent, Treat Food Allergies, Intolerances, and Sensitivities. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah, thank you.
And First Financial Tax and Accounting Services provides signature support for Talk Louisiana. Until tomorrow, stay safe and stay tuned.